from the discussion this afternoon, we were speaking something about the discussion from yesterday evening. The verse is from Bhagavad Gita, 5:17 Bhagavad Gita, where Krishna is describing the four characteristics of one who is moving straight on the path of liberation. Tad buddhayash, tad atmanas, tan nishtas, tat parayana. Their intelligence is fixed in the Supreme. Their mind is fixed in the Supreme. Their nishta, they have firm faith, fixed in the Supreme. They're fixed up. And tat parayanaha. Their shelter is completely in the Supreme. Such a person is moving on the path of liberation. So, no surprise, but a very similar idea is expressed in the 12th chapter of Bhagavad Gita when Krishna is describing the topmost attainment in devotional service. It's that series of verses where Krishna says, this is the best, if you can't do that, do this, and if you can't do this, do the next thing, if you can't do the next thing. He gives stages of attainment, but the topmost stage is mind completely absorbed in me, intelligence always engaged in my service. Thus, you will live in me always, without a doubt. Or you will attain my abode. And presently, in our present life, you will attain Krishna. So, as we discussed this afternoon, the Bhagavatam is simply taking the message of Bhagavad Gita and putting it in the graduate level or perspective. It's still 2 plus 2 equals 4. But how does that work? And in the life of Maharaj Parikshit, because of his quality, these qualities that are mentioned, he faces the reversal, we're using that term, in such a way he takes it as the mercy of Krishna. Great, I'm cursed to die in 7 days. Krishna's mercy. And he means it. It's like Ram. I like this part from Ramayana. When his stepmother was in such a nasty state of mind because of bad association, and her stubborn nature, once it got lodged in Kaikeyi's mind, Ram, Dasaratha and Ram are making a plot against Bharat. They want to do him in. And they want to do me in, and I'm not going to stand for that. Oh, Mantra, thank you. You're my best counsel. And after devastating Dasarath, but because his promise had been given, he couldn't take it back. When Ram was brought before Dasarath, so that Dasarath could tell what were the two boons that Kaikeyi had gotten from him, he couldn't speak. He was sprawled out on the palace floor, disheveled hair, totally distraught, Ram asked him, "My father, what's happened? Is there some disease? Has someone insulted you? Have I in some way done something to hurt you? Please tell me. Father, please speak. Your silence is too much, please. What is it?" But Dasarath couldn't say it. But Kaikeyi could say it. "Ram, there's no disease, and no one has insulted your father, and no one has harmed him in any way or threatened his kingdom in any way. Everything is fine. It's just this one thing. Your father is concerned about whether he'll be able to keep his word. You see, your father holds keeping his word so high in value that, well, Ram, it's only you who can make sure that your father upholds his word. So I'll tell you what's the cause of your father's condition on the promise that you will make your best effort to make sure that your father's word is upheld." "Oh yes, anything, my father, anything. I promise." "Very well, I'll tell you. Long ago, your father gave me his word because I rescued him on the battle in the south of India, and I brought his chariot from the battlefield and brought him back to life, and he was so appreciative, so grateful for my rescuing his life. He promised that he would give me two boons. And I said, I'm very happy. I'll take those boons later. So now, your father has to uphold his word by your assisting him. Today, instead of you being crowned the king, Bharat should be crowned the king, and instead, you should be banished to the forest for 14 years in forest life. And Valmiki Ramayana says, much to her surprise, she saw on the countenance of Ram no change at all. Not surprise, not anger, not disgust, not attachment, not fear. All he said was, "Mother, is that all? If this is the desire of my father, at once I will go. I will leave today. Is that all that is the cause of my father's concern, that I might not uphold his word? He need not have that anxiety. When have I ever given any indication that anything other than my father's word would be upheld? At once. I'll inform my mother, Kaushalya, and at once I'll leave. Before the setting of the sun, I'll be gone. Is there anything else?" She was astonished that no change. Chapter 5, Bhagavad Gita, this message of indifference to the features of duality. King or forest, there's quite a duality. What does it matter? Because for me, what matters is upholding the word of my father. That's for me, that's everything. That's my duty as the son. What else is there for me to do? What would be the value of a kingdom in violation of my father's word? No. Unthinkable. At once I will go. So, virtue protects one from the features of material happiness and distress, because the happiness is another kind of happiness, the happiness of abiding by virtue. And of course, virtue, the real standard of virtue, is something that's God-given, not arbitrary or man-created. So, similarly, Maharaj Parikshit was cursed to die in 7 days. And he took it as just. He didn't become Prabhupada writes. He was a very powerful king. He could have made an effort to neutralize the curse. He could have, you know, get back at that little twerp, that little boy, that one that cursed me. He's powerful. He's so powerful that a Brahmastra weapon fired by Ashwatthama, even before he was born, was checked. And it's an invincible weapon. How powerful is Maharaj Parikshit? He had mystic power. And he had the power of Krishna, who is the master of all mystic power, who is so dear to him as life. But the feature of duality was not his standard of happiness or distress. And just as that verse that we were Mukti Pades Vadaya Bhak, the verse that we were reading again and again, he went back to Godhead. Mukti Pade. There's a very nice section in Chaitanya Charitamrita where Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya complained to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya said, Vyasadeva made a mistake when he wrote Mukti Pade. Svadaya Bhak. It should have been Bhakti Pade Svadaya Bhak. Mahaprabhu asked, why do you say like that? Because when people think of mukti, they think of this other kind of mukti. Sayuja Mukti, merging with the Supreme. Abominable merging with the Supreme. When you merge with the Supreme, where's the opportunity for service? And without service, who would be attracted to merging? Losing your identity and merging with the Supreme. How horrible. Then he went on and said, actually there's two types of Sayuja Mukti. One is merging into the effulgence of the Lord, and the other is merging into the body of the Lord. And of the two, the worse is merging into the body of the Lord, because one can see the body of the Lord. You merge into the body of the Lord. How horrible. In that position, there's no service. Vyas made a mistake. It should have been Bhakti Pades Vadaya Bhak. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu laughed and said, Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, Vyas makes no mistakes. The word Mukti Pade means this is the personality of Godhead. Only He can give liberation. So, he who is the giver of liberation is the personality of Godhead. So, Mukti Pade is perfectly fine. Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya said, well, all right, but Bhakti Pade would have been better. Because that is very clear, it's personality of Godhead. But I accept, Mukti Pade is okay, but it should be Bhakti Pade. And Mahaprabhu laughed and said, Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, before, not only a short while ago, you were the staunch impersonalist. You would argue and debate and give philosophical exposition about merging with the Supreme, and now you can't even stand to hear the word. And it was understood, I forget who said it, this is because, maybe Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya said, because of the mercy of my brother-in-law. Because Gopinath Acharya gave me his mercy. Because the devotee gave me his mercy, I've gotten your mercy. Because I had no access to your mercy except through you, through my brother-in-law. Because he's dear to you and he gave his mercy upon me. Now, my life has completely changed. Mahaprabhu was very happy to hear his understanding. It wasn't, in other words, it wasn't his merit, or it wasn't something independent of the mercy of the devotees. It was the mercy of the devotees. So one who, this is a lesson of life in the matter of how we face challenges. I doubt if for any one of us, if our challenges are going to be equal to that one. You are going to die in 7 days from the bite of a mystical bird, mystical serpent, a serpent with wings. There's no such thing as a serpent. There's birds with wings, and there's serpents that crawl, but there's not serpents with wings. So it's a mystical bird, snake bird, whose poison was so intense that as soon as he bit Maharaj Parikshit, at once his body burst into flames. And he was gone. And he knew that that was going to happen. Now supposing you're walking along the path of life and somebody taps you on the shoulder and says, guess what? I got some news for you. In 7 days, finished, quit. And you go, oh, Krishna's mercy. Krishna is very kind. Because he understood not exactly what was the plan of the Supreme Lord, but there was a plan of the Supreme Lord, and this was an opportunity for him to fix his consciousness upon the personality of Godhead and go back to Godhead. So the passage we're going to read, there's 3 verses. It's from chapter 19, verses 20, 21, 22. And it's the sages who have come to be present. In one sense, it's witness this wonderful event, but also give their auspicious presence to make, by their presence, make even more auspicious this wonderful event. It's understood by the presence of saintly persons, any yajna or ceremony of something, some event, it's made more auspicious. So we like for saintly persons to come and be present for whatever's going on, a Rath Yatra or Janmashtami or a wedding or something. We like that. If that can happen, it's wonderful. And then many, it's really wonderful. So all the sages throughout all the land assembled to be present at the time of the departure of the soul of Maharaj Parikshit. And in the verses that they're going to describe, or they're going to speak, they describe what's going to happen before it happens. They describe that he's going back to Godhead, and how fortunate they are to be present when he's going back to Godhead, and how fortunate he is to be going back to Godhead. Krishna's mercy. Not, oh, this is terrible. He's going back to Godhead. I mean, so there's, in this discussion, there's some feelings of separation from a great soul, at the same time, the celebration, because the great soul is going back to Godhead. So, starting with, well, I'll read text 19, there's the previous one, before they speak, and then 20 as they begin speaking. All the great sages who assembled there also praised the decision of Maharaj Parikshit, which was give up his kingdom and prepare himself to be fixed upon the personality of Godhead. What would somebody do if they were told they're a very wealthy person, very influential person, and they have 7 days? probably something like, you know, go to all the places they wanted to go and see all the places they wanted to see and experience all the things they wanted to experience and hang out with all the people they wanted to hang out with and do all these wild, they normally wouldn't do them things, but this is it, I'm just going to do it because this is my last shot at it, and splurge. But not in Maharaj Pariksit. It's sober. Naturally, the sages are inclined to do good to common men, for they have all qualitative powers of the Supreme Lord. Therefore, they were very much pleased to see Maharaj Pariksit, a devotee of the Lord, and they spoke as follows. So, text 20. The sages said, "Oh, chief of the saintly kings of the Pandu dynasty, who are strictly in the line of Lord Sri Krishna, it is not at all astonishing that you gave up your throne, which is decorated with the helmets of so many kings, to achieve eternal association with the personality of Godhead." So here's a person, they're saying, that understand, they're at the top of material, whatever you want to call it, you know, success, prosperity, the throne. He was the emperor of the world. He was in a line of families that was esteemed like anything. Great wealth, immense power. He was the top of the heap. He climbed Mount Everest and come back down again. You know, he was at the top. And he walked away with it, or from it, with no attachment at all. It was not at all a difficult thing. And why? What was he going to? The eternal kingdom of God. To the eternal association of Krishna. So there's two phrases in the verse which Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur points out. Bhavatsu Krishnam Samanuvrateshu. That is, he was a descendant of the Pandavas who were completely attached to Krishna, dedicated exclusively to Krishna. And he was their descendant. He was of the quality as them. And as the Pandavas desired only the association of the Lord, Bhagavat Pashrava Kama, they desired only the association of the Lord, so this was also the quality of Maharaj Pariksit. So it's not at all astonishing that give him like half of a good excuse to let go of the kingdom, and he's gone. While he was king, he was doing. He wasn't begrudging, "Oh, why do I have to do this? I have to go to the office and do my duties. I like the weekends better." Sorry. He was involved with the material energy, which is complicated, being a king. Being a temple president is complicated. Being a GBC is complicated. Being chairman of the GBC is complicated. But for the service of Krishna, when called upon to do, one, like the tortoise, you extend your limbs because here's some service for Krishna. And the happiness is because it's service to Krishna, not because it's a piece of cake. It's because it's service to Krishna. And through that medium of service to Krishna, attachment for Krishna and detachment from matter follow through proper engagement in duties that are prescribed for us. The sages said, we shall all wait here until the foremost devotee of the Lord, Maharaj Parikshit, returns to the supreme planet, which is completely free from all mundane contamination and all kinds of lamentation. So like waiting for a Cape Canaveral or something, a launching pad for Maharaj Parikshit to go to Krishna Loka. That place where there's no material contamination. Because he's this super qualified devotee. He's the foremost of all devotees. And consider, practically speaking, other than Shukadeva Goswami, on planet Earth, who could we say was more eminently qualified than Maharaj Parikshit? Maharaj Parikshit was so qualified that before he even did anything, he got the mercy of the Lord. He was just in the womb. Just, you know, being an embryo. And he was saved by the Lord. And the Lord gave him his darshan. Not only the Lord protected him, but here I am. Thumb size, just the right size for you to see me. Here I go. And then it was gone. How dear was he to the Lord? And how much the Lord was dear to him? Completely attached. Maya sakta manaparta. Yogam yunjan madashaya. These important verses from Bhagavad Gita describing the qualification of one who is residing with Krishna, even in his present body, or her present body, in the abode of Krishna. And so when the body is given up, they're in the abode of Krishna. Prabhupada described like this once about himself. The position of a pure devotee is, although moving about the world, one should understand they're with Krishna. He said this once in Los Angeles when he arrived. It was in a room conversation. The Prabhupada was saying, I know that my disciples are always talking about, and we certainly were, talking about what is Prabhupada doing now. So he said, you call up in India to find out when is Prabhupada leaving to go to Japan, and then after Japan he's going into Australia. What did he do in Australia? And then he's going to Hawaii, and very soon he'll be here in Los Angeles. And in this way, your thoughts are absorbed in speaking about what is Swamiji doing now. He said, but you should know that I'm always with Krishna. I'm always in Goloka Vrindavan. That is the fact. It was, whoa. Let's keep that in mind when we speak about Prabhupada's life. Why is it so? Because his thoughts were always absorbed in Krishna, and his intelligence was always engaged in him. And as Krishna says, such a person always is with me, without a doubt. Without a doubt. So, similarly for Maharaj Parikshit. Prabhupada writes that there's this sorry feeling that when a great soul leaves us, we no longer have their association, and at the same time there's a celebration aspect. They don't have to deal with this place anymore. They're going to be with Krishna. And that place when they're with Krishna was without any material contamination. So, celebration. And for that reason, they decided to stay until that event would take place. Text 22. All that was spoken by the great sages was very sweet to hear, full of meaning, and appropriately presented as perfectly true. So, after hearing them, Maharaj Parikshit, desiring to hear of the activities of Sri Krishna, the Personality of Godhead, congratulated the sages. There's no purport here, but in Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur's commentary, he goes through scrutinizing the words of the verse and says that the sages had spoken just rightly in four different ways. They said that samam, that Maharaj Parikshit has this qualification of being impartial. Remember the Bhagavad Gita discussion from Friday evening? The fifth chapter verses is the symptoms of one who is on this path of liberation and is in transcendence is they're impartial towards manifestations of the material energy, and we were using this term, you know, displays of duality. They're impartial. So samam. The sages were going to stay. They had made this commitment. We'll stay here until this passing. They weren't celebrating. They weren't lamenting. They were in this samam condition. And their words were madhu chut. They were flowing with honey. And this was their praise of Maharaj Parikshit, not only as a devotee or an exalted devotee, but the best of devotees. And they meant it, and he was. So as they spoke those words of truth, in the presence of Maharaj Parikshit, it was madhuchut, flowing with honey or flowing with nectar, their nectarian words. And their words were profound or very grave. Guru, Prabhupada has told us, guru means heavy. Or profound or grave. Because they weren't just speaking about, you know, I wonder what the weather's going to be six, 7 days from now. Is it going to be raining or sunny? Maharaj Parikshit leaves. They were speaking about the eternal abode of the Lord. The eternal abode of the Lord is that abode that is haram, from the earlier verse, loka haram virajaksham. It's this eternal abode, supreme abode, where there's no influence of the modes of nature. It's completely pure and uncontaminated. Vishokam, where there's no lamentation. No hankering, and therefore no lamentation. What's life like where there's no hankering? It's no material hankering. There's desire, but the desire is in relation to Krishna. Mother Jasoda wants to feed Krishna. Krishna breaks the butter pot. Mother Jasoda wants to chase him with a stick. Mother Jasoda, when he cries, Mother Jasoda throws the stick away. He wants to bind him with a rope. There's desire, but it's in relation to Krishna, in expressions of love of Krishna. So devotees, as devotees, we need to make those distinctions. Our desire, of course, whether Krishna lets us bind him with a rope or not, or whether Krishna lets us feed him or not, or whether Krishna lets us do anything or not, That's up to him. But we have desires to serve him in a pleasing and favorable way. We certainly can't imitate Mother Yasoda. We can desire to dress the deity very nicely on festival day, or we may desire to have nice Harinam party for the pleasure of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and his associates. Or we may desire something. But the prasadam for the program tonight comes out very nice. We may have some desire like that, to serve the devotees nicely. But that's not of material nature, provided the interest is truly not so I'll get some praise that I made nice prasadam, we had a nice kirtan or a nice festival or something, but that Krishna will be pleased. That Krishna will be pleased. And that's genuinely our motivation. Then this detachment from matter is naturally there. And the attraction for the transcendental abode is naturally there. And that's where the sages, they were understanding, besides, you know, the external features, here's what's going to happen. Maharishi Pariksit is going back to Godhead, to that abode where there's no influence of matter. What's that like? Like, it's over? No more whatever the things are that cause you, you know, unhappiness? No more of it. No more taxes. No more political elections. No more school, hey? No more school. We're always learning, so there's school. But that's not the other thing. And avyalika means perfectly true. This word avyalika or nirvyalika is used in another place, several places actually, in the Bhagavatam, where it's describing the heart of a devotee. With the heart of a devotee, there's no pretension. You don't pretend something that you're not. You don't even pretend humility when you're not. You're genuinely whatever you are. Genuinely interested in the happiness of Krishna. Genuinely humble. Genuinely detached from circumstantial things. Genuinely. Nirvyalika, no pretense. It's described, the word is used to describe devotional service that's rendered in such a way that Krishna is most pleased. Because Krishna knows our motivations. Sometimes we don't even know our motivations, but Krishna knows our motivations. Our purposes, how much we want his happiness. So they were perfectly true statement of Sutta Goswami describing this scene is their words were perfectly true because in fact the attainment of Maharishi Pariksit was perfection. Of course that was kind of easy to discern because he was a perfect devotee, he was a pure devotee. But he attained the planet of the Lord. So, because their words were so pleasing, because what they said was so true, what they had said was so profound and deep, and there was no pretense in what was going to happen. Maharishi Pariksit, as much as they were happy to be in his association, he was very happy to be in their association. And where did his mind go? He wanted to hear about Krishna. So he next is going to speak to them. And he's going to do what Maharishi Pariksit likes to do, ask, can you speak Krishna Katha? Of course, just as he's prepared to do that, da-da-da-da, Shukadeva Goswami appears on the scene. Just like that. Something like, you know, the Narada profile. Narada just, he just has this uncanny savvy that he just knows when to go to the right place at the right time and say the right thing. He's wonderful. But that's because he's so tuned in to Krishna, as is Shukadeva Goswami. Their lives are nothing but speaking the message of Krishna in the right time, at the right place, to the right people, in the right manner. So this is Srimad Bhagavatam giving us, so the seed of the idea is there in Bhagavad Gita, and how that seed manifests itself in a mature state in the life of a pure devotee is manifest here. Prabhupada described when he came, because when Prabhupada came to America, as you know, he had kartals, 7 rupees, deities of Radha and Krishna, and first canto Bhagavatam. What can you do with 14 rupees? What can you do with 14 rupees? Even today, you can't do anything with 14 rupees. Then you couldn't even exchange 14. It was like, you know, having something useless, at least in America. So, but he had his Srimad Bhagavatam, and he had a manuscript of Bhagavad Gita, which later on somebody stole, which they couldn't do anything with, and he had to rewrite his manuscript of Bhagavad Gita, but he had Srimad Bhagavatam. And Prabhupada described that this first canto of Srimad Bhagavatam is so wonderful that everything you need to know to go back to Godhead is here. So if you can become absorbed somehow, like, you know, somehow let it go inside, you're going back to Godhead. Somehow assimilated, osmosis, somehow. Liquid form and drink it. Somehow inside. But it doesn't go in by that method. Bhanti gayanti grananti sadavaha, by that method. By hearing, by vibrating, and by internalizing this message. If we let it go deeply into our lives, then our whole life becomes oriented like the life of Maharaj Parikshit. It's, as we were discussing this afternoon, it gives us an opportunity to have our minds sufficiently cleansed so that we can concentrate upon Krishna instead of cluttered minds or dirty minds or conditioned minds. Cleansed minds by this hearing of Krishna. Hearing of Krishna and chanting Hare Krishna. Or vibrating the topics of Krishna. Krishna Katha. Our little tribulations of life, little compared to this one, can be faced in the same way as Maharaj Parikshit faced. And it's not like, you know, we have to, each time there's a little tribulation, you give up everything and go into the banks of the Ganges and sit down. But his anticipation was that final chapter of life is coming, so that degree of detachment was there. But the positive was, what allowed that fullness of and genuineness of his detachment was the positive attraction to hear topics of Krishna. But it, as we heard this morning, It didn't just fall out of the sky, I'll do that later. It was his life. When he was small, when he was, before he was born, when he was young, because he was in the family of the Pandavas, guess what he was hearing? Topics of Krishna. And when he was king, although he was busy being king, he was hearing topics of Krishna. When he was going to challenge Maharaj, the personality of Kali, each of the places in the course of his travel, at the palaces where he stayed, the bards came and they were singing the praises of the Pandavas as the previous kings, who just happened to be pure devotees. He was hearing Krishna Katha. And he wasn't just like, you know, a spectator. He was literally in ecstasy. The description, he's going to fight the personality of Kali, kill him. But his consciousness was, he was in ecstasy. His tears were streaming from his eyes and his body was trembling just from bhava, just hearing Krishna Katha. That's Maharaj Pariksit. At the same time, as required to do his service, ready with his sharpened sword to kill the personality of Kali for violating religious principles in his kingdom. Or whatever it is that's appropriate in our circumstance for seeing to our prescribed duty. Just as Krishna says in simple language in Bhagavad Gita, two things, perform your prescribed duty and always think of me. Should be pretty simple. Sounds pretty simple. Perform your prescribed duty and always think of me. And it's not, you do one this type of the day and then you do the other another part of the day. We're not, this isn't a secular instruction. Separation of the religious part of my life and the worldly part of my life. So much for God, so much for me, so much for God, so much for me. And then we get confused and think, you know, so much for me, so much for me, so much for me. So much for God. But it's in all circumstances of life, including the difficult or challenging ones, in all circumstances of life, always think of Krishna. Be what makes always thinking of someone possible is when you're attached to that someone. When you're attached to someone, wherever you are, you're thinking of that someone. Even Kamsa, he was always thinking of Krishna. Not in a favorable way, but he was always thinking of Krishna. When he was eating, when he was lying down, when he was at his, sitting on his throne, when he was wherever he was, always thinking of Krishna. So, unfavorably. And for us, the practices, the regulative practices, have that objective. And the principles of cleanliness, mercy, austerity, truthfulness, that's to enhance that same full absorption and concentrated thought of Krishna. That's our life as devotees. And Maharaj Pariksit is being held up for us as a role model, particularly how to receive the message of Bhagavatam in such a way the stage of perfection will follow in our life. Hare Krishna. Any comments or questions from anyone?
Maharaj, oftentimes I feel like, although I have remembrance of Krishna, but I still feel the modes of nature are very active, even when remembrance is there. I was just wondering why.
I couldn't understand what your question was.
My question?
Yeah, my question is, like, oftentimes I have remembrance of Krishna, but still I feel like the modes of nature are very active and, you know, the remembrance is there, but still that activity is still in the mode.
Activity is still in the modes. I'm not sure what you mean. I can guess what you mean. Activity is still in the modes. Like in the background is thought of Krishna, but in the foreground is...
Yeah, it's not transcendental. It's like, you know, you have remembrance.
Okay. 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 So that's described in Nectar Devotion. It's... You familiar with that section? There's some... reflection of Krishna in the form of some thought of Krishna, but it's not direct, it's not full. Some moment of something. It's abhas. It's indirect. And it comes and it goes, just like, you know, there's a light source, and if I had a mirror and just tilted the mirror in a certain direction and passed it past your eyes, you get this reflection in your eyes. And then tilt the mirror a little bit more and it's gone. Oh, I saw some light. It's not direct, it's just a reflection and it's flickering. So that mindfulness of Krishna or thought of Krishna that you just described, compared to direct experience of Krishna, it's just a reflection. But it's some indications. And it is a kindness of Krishna, an act of Krishna's kindness to encourage you. But you should understand, Rupa Goswami wants us to understand, that that's not what the experience of our full Krishna consciousness is, even for that brief period of time when the modes of nature are still active. It's just a reflection. But it's some indication. Okay? Am I ready enough? In the back? You have the little microphone? There we go.
So, Prabhupada Maharaj, earlier today, in response to a query of mine, you had said that one's Krishna consciousness is not dependent upon the circumstances that one's in.
Then it's full, and the other is not. Krishna consciousness is not created by circumstance, but for many of us, or most of us, we experience something when the circumstances are right.
Not at the topmost level.
Yeah.
So I have one doubt about that. I accept that, but I just wanted to...
Okay, go ahead.
I just wanted to see how that explanation you gave is not inconsistent with a couple of statements I remember reading recently.
Go ahead.
I'm sure it's not in the text, but I know how.
Okay.
One is that the pure devotee, when he hears the holy name of the Lord or he hears Krishna Katha, then he experiences great ecstasy, which would seems to me the context that was given there is like new ecstasy was experienced that maybe wasn't there before, I don't know. And then the other statement that I'm thinking of is, you know, maybe Lord Chaitanya is just expressing this idea for our protection, but he says that even the pure devotee must be very careful about avoiding bad association, for example, a man avoiding close association of women.
Okay. So in the first example, the principle of material circumstances can never create bhakti or the experience of happiness of bhakti. The hearing of Krishna Katha is not a material circumstance that It's directly Krishna. You see the distinction?
Certainly, I understand that material circumstances aren't what give rise to bhakti. But
the Krishna katha is not a material circumstance.
Correct. Yeah, I understand this.
Okay. So when hearing Krishna katha, feelings of ecstasy that are newer and newer, because the experience of the spiritual world is newer and newer. It's by nature. It's ever fresh. It's a spiritual impetus, not a material circumstantial impetus. Okay, so we can go on to the second example?
Yes.
You want to stay on the first one some more?
No, that was okay. Wonderful and simple explanation.
Okay. The second one was avoiding unwholesome association. Asat sangatyag evaishnavachar. It's just by nature, that's the nature of one who is advanced. Is they don't care for asat sangha. For one who is not advanced, they have to be vigilant and avoid it as a regulative principle. Because, like the example of fire, if you put too much wood on a small fire, you can put the fire out. But when a fire is blazing, you can put any amounts of wood on it, and it would ignite that wood. So proportionate to one's fire of devotion. And here's a Prabhupada story. Sanskrit Marsh told me this Prabhupada story. Prabhupada was in New York, way back in the early days, and visiting Boston. There wasn't even yet a temple. It was just like a rented place. So when Prabhupada came, they picked him up in the airport in a taxi because they didn't have a car. And so when the taxi cab driver picked up Prabhupada, Prabhupada was sitting in the back with Sanskrit Marsh, and the taxi cab driver was, yakety-yak-yakker taxi cab driver. Hey, Swamiji! Are you one of them Swamis, huh? Prabhupada said, yes. And he said, does that mean you can, sleep on a bed of nails or something like that? And Prabhupada's reply was, better than that. And the man said, oh. What's better than that, Swamiji? And Prabhupada said, I can be in a room full of naked women and not be disturbed. Oh. Sanskrit Maharaj thought the man might have the wrong idea of what Swamiji was meaning to say. Like that's what he does for a living or something. But one who is fixed in Krishna consciousness can be in unwholesome association and be not at all disturbed. One who is not in such an advanced stage, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's instruction is one must be careful, because in an unwholesome association one can fall. It's a vidhi of vaidhi sadhana bhakti for that stage of devotion. One should be very careful. Now, he is speaking of himself as being such a person. But he's the personality of Godhead, teaching by example. And particularly, one who is in the sannyas order must be very strict in this regard. And if one isn't very strict in this regard, one can fall down, because it's within the varnashram system, there are regulations, and one should not think, oh, I'm such an advanced sannyasi that I can, it's okay. It's not okay. even one baby, because it's a regulative principle to observe. It's like Krishna's argument to Arjuna. Arjuna thinking, I want to leave the battlefield. Well, you can't leave the battlefield because you don't have the qualification. You must perform your duty. Well, what if I get really advanced and then I can give up my duty? No, then you can't give up your duty either, because in the advanced stage you have to set the example for those that are not advanced, because otherwise they'll imitate your behavior. So, not advanced, perform your duty. Advanced, perform your duty. So like that. Mahaprabhu was speaking in that way. For the vidhis for Vaidhi Sadhana Bhakti, is that one should very carefully avoid this unwholesome association. But for Haridas Thakur, it's not a violation for him. There's not a fall down for him. We can't imitate. That's the idea. His bhakti wasn't created by that circumstance or broken by an adverse circumstance, but in a weaker, less mature stage that can happen. Unfortunately, it can happen, and it happens. Yes?
But Guru Maharaj, the unwholesome situation does not have to happen with opposite gender.
Of course
it
not.
It could be in any other circumstance where you're not able to control.
Sure. That's just one example. Yeah. That's just one example. There's many other circumstances that can cause one to fall down besides that particular one. But that particular one is a very strong one. Very strong. No, it's not an injunction that just applies to sannyasis. It's an injunction that applies to householders. Householders should be very careful. It's not that I'm a householder so I can, you know, la-di-da-di-da with the opposite gender. Not so. Not wholesome. But that's not the only area of devotional service that one must be vigilant. Many other areas. But the topic that he's raising is, I made a statement early in the afternoon that bhakti cannot be generated by material circumstance. Even, you know, heaps and piles and make a mountain of piety and you're not going to thereby generate devotion. Because were that so, then something material can generate something spiritual, and it's not so. Any more than by combinations of matter you can make life. Life comes from life, not from combinations of matter. Or bhakti isn't created by quantity, a large quantity of piety. And somehow you get pushed over the edge and you become the bhakti yogi. It's by association with those who are carrying bhakti that one awakens bhakti. Life produces life. Anything else?
When I was waiting, if anybody's...
Go ahead. Here comes back to Mike.
Yeah, Maharaj, actually this is not very much related to today's class. But this is something I'm always contemplating on. When it comes to hearing, even if it is meant for long hours or like even the same repetitive lecture, even if I hear so many number of times, I never get tired of it and I'm able to focus better. But what happens when it comes to chanting, I'm not able to have the same focus. I mean, I try to hear one mantra at a time and follow. But still, after a certain point of time, probably first half of the round, then after that, it just goes down, actually. So I was just wondering, what is really the reason?
What's the reason?
Mm-hmm.
You really want to know?
Because what happens is, like, the same lectures, even, like, so much okay, I would have
I got,
heard,
I got
like...
I got the question. I got the question. The answer is, we have an issue with Krishna. We got a problem in our relationship with Krishna. That's the reason. Since so long ago, we can't even find when it happened, but we turned our back on Krishna. We said, Krishna, I'm breaking my relationship with you. And Krishna said, don't do that. There's only suffering. There's not happiness outside of our relationship. Please don't do that. Krishna, I'm leaving. I have my free will. I'm 18 now. I'm leaving. You can say yes or no, but I'm leaving. So say yes. But even if you say no, I'm leaving. So, we're carrying that issue with Krishna. And now we're chanting Krishna's name, but it's that long, uncountable long time where we've maintained this misuse of free will program. And now we're saying, well, I changed my mind. And so the mind is restless when you're chanting Krishna's name. It's because those issues that we're carrying, at least the residual effect of that issue that we have, the desire to enjoy apart from Krishna. Why not? Who's Krishna anyways? Or, at least some of the time I should be at the center. Why not? I'll take my turn. Krishna and I will take turns. Krishna is that's varieties of the theme of Raga Dvesha Samutina Dvandva Mohina Bharata. That's the problem. Raga and Dvesha toward Krishna. Dvandva Mohina Bharata. And then we try to chant. So, Bhakti, there's a very nice phrase that Bhaktivinoda Thakur describes in one of some of the ways that to improve the quality of our chanting. When chanting, chant with the mood, Krishna, please accept me. Again, it's from my side, not from your side. I turned away from you. I'm now asking you for forgiveness for that, and please accept me again in your association. It's a short form of Srimati Radharani, oh energy of Krishna, please engage me in your service system. Please accept me. It's a very humbling mood. It's a from the heart mood. And it's directed towards that issue that we have with Krishna, not only had, but have, with the lingering presence of that. Anything else? Hello? Yes?
I guess this kind of piggybacks on this devotee's question where when a person is very well situated in Krishna consciousness, they're not so vulnerable to the pose of material nature, that they can kind of confidently move through the material world and not suffer a fall down so easily. But I remember, like, you know, when I watched Memories and things like that, or, you know, read this Prabhupada Vamrita, like, there was one time when some devotees just walked into Prabhupada's room and he had just tears coming from his eyes. And I'm like, Prabhupada, what's wrong? And he's like, I was just praying that Krishna would never fall into nada.
Yeah.
Or, you know, things like that. And I was just wondering, and I don't know if you know or if anyone has ever said anything, but did Prabhupada ever really feel like
he was, what Prabhupada specifically said was, he was always praying to Krishna to protect him from Maya, and for that reason he would not fall down. So he was never thinking, I'm a chosen person, I'm protected. Never like that. Diminutive. That's the nature of an elevated Vaishnava. They're feeling protected, and there's a reason why they're feeling protected. They're seeking protection. They're never taking it for granted, their position. That's the advanced Vaishnava. They're not afraid of the illusory energy in that sense, but not flirting either. Prabhupada made the comment about you Western boys and girls, you're always flirting with Maya. You go out on the limb to see how far you can go on the limb before you hear the limb crack, and then you run back toward the trunk of the tree. This is not good. Stay in a safe and secure position. Always under Krishna's protection. For preaching work, Prabhupada would say, there is risk. But, you know, just stay around the temple, there's risk too. You're not fully engaged in carrying forward the pure message of Krishna, for which there's special protection from Krishna. Just stay around and don't do anything. You're vulnerable also. But being in the material world is a risky place. I want you to be aware of the risk and be very cautious. So your question specifically was Prabhupada.
Huh? You never feel vulnerable.
Protected. But not cavalier because I'm protected. They're not attracted. The pulling and the pushing is having a desire to be the enjoyer of that. Or, and if it doesn't give me enjoyment, I don't like it. It smells bad, it looks bad, it feels bad, it sounds bad, I don't like it. Attraction, repulsion for sense objects. It's because of the spirit of wanting to be the enjoyer of it. And if Krishna is the enjoyer of it, then you see it as it is. Okay, it's time for another kirtan. Bhakti Bhan is still with us, or he's...